Great wrestling fans here in the state of Georgia, what do you think of the Stinger?
Hey, I gotta say, Savannah is live. Yes, indeed. You know, Grassy, Great American Bash is coming up. Draw a line right down the middle of the ring, and on one side, you got Dusty Rhodes, funky like a monkey, you know, like he always is. You got the Road Warriors, brothers in paint, you know what I'm saying? You got Dr. Death, Nikita Kola, and on the other side of the tracks, you got the Four Horsemen. Yeah, that's what I say, that same thing. Barry Windham, a new attraction to the Four Horsemen. I suppose because you're with the Horsemen, you think you're convenient now, don't you? I suppose because you're with the Nature Boy, you're special! No. This right here is Diddly Squat. Diddly Squat! Dear Rossi!
Ladies and gentlemen, we're right back for the Tag Team Champions of the World at the best time.
Go right into it.
I was gonna sing you a song about wrestling.
Sing me a song, you're the wrestling man.
But right now, I only have a Mr. Rogers theme song stuck in my head for some reason.
Uh-huh.
And Sylvia's Mother by Dr. Hook and the Medicine whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Sylvia's Mother. It's a weird song.
Sounds pretty weird.
But it's Baby Oil and Blow. We're your hosts. That's us, Matt O. and Natonio Adams.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody.
Let's make you somebody important. You can be...
I don't know if I have it in me to be somebody important.
Yeah, no, you're going to be the... Man, we might use it poor, but I like it, especially when we're talking Nitro. You're going to be the Scott Flash Norton to my Buff the Stuff Bagwell.
Oh, cool.
He's cool, huh? Big in Japan.
He's a burly man for sure.
Big in Japan. I don't think I even have modern wrestling stuff
for you. Never been to Japan.
No?
Modern wrestling. There's big news this week.
Oh, yeah?
I wouldn't know. I was just saying.
That's a good lead-in, though.
Yeah.
Sounded official.
I thought maybe if like I put it out there with some a little bit of confidence in my voice, you'd piggyback and be like, oh, yeah, that's
the
right. There was. There's a thing going on. They always do the modern wrestling news.
The Elite guys trademarked a bunch of Elite stuff.
Oh, cool.
Or like all-in stuff, not Elite.
So much more t-shirt sales coming from those guys in the future.
They also trademarked Tuesday Night Dynamite.
That feels like a real throwback name for the supposedly progressive, taking wrestling in a new direction type thing they keep claiming that they're doing.
I hope it's all just a swerve and they're going to WWE.
Yeah, they're the only people not left in WWE anymore. If they plan on like starting their own wrestling venture with other wrestlers, who would even wrestle for them? It'd just be like the same six guys wrestling each other over and over again. It'd be like that NWO sold out pay-per-view where they tried to do an all NWO pay-per-view.
It almost
and
worked.
It was one of the worst things
was it?
That anybody had ever seen. That's what it's going to be. The Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes looking around at a charred wasteland, realizing that there is literally zero wrestlers left in this world who aren't in some sort of NXT something or other.
Oh.
Everybody is a scorched earth. They've salted the ground.
What about your guy Flip Gordon?
No more crops will grow here.
Oh, jeez.
It's,
it's a dark.
Vince has been telling us this is the way it's going for decades at this point, and apparently everybody just still hasn't gotten it through their thick skulls.
Man.
There's no professional wrestling. There's only WWE. Conform, assimilate.
Impact's
you'll
still
be destroyed.
Doing well, right?
Impact Wrestling, I think I was reading, once again having troubles with their networks.
Really?
So this will be, the 25th time that they're having trouble with their TV deal and they're looking for another one?
Which is weird
because they dropped to a smaller network than what they're on now. Is there one?
No.
They're going to be on like...
They were already on the preview channel.
They're going to have to be on Crackle next. It won't even be a TV. It'll just... We're now exclusively on the Crackle service. So everybody, like, go out there and download Crackle.
Crackle, like, just assures me, like, they're free. And they're like, no, seriously. Just, you, we got a couple movies. You want to watch this movie? Where it's free. And I'm like, I don't believe you, Crackle.
Ain't nothing for free, Crackle.
And I don't fall for it.
Watch Impact Wrestling every week on CISO. So I'm pretty sure that doesn't exist anymore. I think that service only lasted for like 6 months, isn't it? It's like, no. I assure you,
we're here.
It didn't go out of business. It's where we are, and we're thriving. Business is better than ever.
You got to...
Get out of the wrestling business unless you're Vince McMahon, people.
Sell your show to Nickelodeon and make it for the children.
Might be smart.
Bring wrestling back to the kids.
Slime people when they lose a match.
They had a guy pee on another guy's coat tonight on Monday Night Raw.
On Nickelodeon?
No, on Monday Night Raw.
I was going to say, that's a bit bawdy for children's programming.
It didn't seem very PG to me.
And seeing, as WWE wrestling is children's programming, I'll say that's a little bit bawdy for children's programming.
They showed a picture of the gentleman from behind. You could see the pee going between his legs.
Well, this is nothing new. I mean, X-Pac is the pioneer of peeing on things on Monday Night Raw. They're just following this trail that's already been blazed by the true originators in this business.
Best part was when he was done, quote unquote, peeing, you could hear like the crackle from the plastic bottle.
Okay. Maybe just a colostomy bag. You don't know what this guy's been through.
It's live television.
These people take a lot of bumps. They got a lot of health concerns going on.
It was Rockstar Spud.
Cool.
He's a cool guy.
If you say so. Modern wrestling news, everybody. There it was.
Yeah.
Wrapping it up for this week.
We're in an abyss here.
I gotta tell you, we gotta get in here. We gotta talk about this wrestling. We gotta do it like pulling a Band-Aid. Full on. I did not fall asleep last night.
Oh.
I've been up for like multiple days. My brain's not really working straight right now. I've watched this wrestling at some point in the last like 36 hours. I've got so many chemicals going through me, just like trying to get me to go to sleep and shit. None of them worked.
Wow.
I got like CBD oil going on.
You might fall asleep during this.
Brown liquors of all sorts. I could just fall asleep into the microphone right now, quite frankly.
I also slept terribly last night, and then my reward was working really hard today.
Oh, so cool.
And
felt so good to toss and turn all night and then be like, well, that blizzard's over. I guess I'll go shovel the 6 inches of slush now.
Oh, you did that right away?
Oh, yeah.
See, I came...
Gotta get that out of the way.
I came home after a grueling 8 hours of work and then did it once it had all been driven over and turned to ice.
Oh, yeah. It was heavy stuff.
It was terrible.
I gotta tell you, I went hard on the weight bench yesterday, too.
Oh.
And then that stuff went crazy, and I was like...
How much you bench?
I'm super sore, and now I'm out here shoveling this shit. This was supposed to be a rest day. I'm probably going to pull something. I hope this doesn't, impede future gains. That would be a travesty.
Quit holding that flask and drink from it, my friend. That'll help your sore muscles.
Taking little sips.
That's what I'm doing.
Just taking little sips.
Yeah.
Paragon of health advice over there.
Yeah.
Hear that, children?
Yeah.
Good.
I'm not
going
to be happy.
Matt. He's doing great.
I'm not going to be happy until I can turn to that Jake the Snake body.
Oh, that's the modern wrestling news we should have talked about. He did like a 3-hour interview on the Joe Rogan podcast this week.
Really?
I listened to it one day while I was at work. It's delightful. He goes into all sorts of detail about doing steroids and, smuggling people's drugs in his snake bag across the border. And all of the molestations that happened in his family and all the people his father raped. And this
feel good episode.
Joe Rogan couldn't believe everything he was hearing.
Wow.
He hangs out with sleazy MMA guys all day.
I think the thing that I can't believe is that the snake ever did steroids.
It was a different snake, like every 10 days or so, according to Jake. So he'd go back to Connecticut. He'd drop whatever snake he was on the road with off with their snake guy, get a new snake, go out there. So there was never any one snake that could eat enough drugs to, like, fully fuck up the snake.
Yeah.
You just get pretty fucked up, and then you trade it out for a new snake. It was a nice little system they had going on, it sounds like.
He was really feeding the snakes drugs?
No. He'd just, keep everybody's drugs in the snake bag, and then
sometimes
he'd be like, give me a percentage of your drugs, and I'll get them over the border for you, because everybody else is afraid to get busted. And he was like, I'm Jake the Snake Roberts.
I don't give a fuck.
You know what, me digging around in my Python bag? Give me a break.
What a badass.
Yeah. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a hero, if anything.
So,
he got drugs. I'm going to put him in the bag.
Guess that'll be my recommendation for the week. This,
I was here earlier.
This rundown we're doing brought to you by the Joe Rogan podcast.
You forgot to put your drugs in the bag.
Go out there and support Joe Rogan. He's a cool guy, right?
Will you give me that, just a little shave off the top of your bag of drugs?
You know what else I like about Joe Rogan?
News radio.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I heard that he bullied Andy Dick a lot on the set back when they were making that show.
Did he really?
Yeah, Andy Dick really doesn't like him.
That's really funny.
Who doesn't like Andy Dick? That guy's a delight.
There were no kids on news radio, right? Were there any Lifetime? They were all adults.
Yes, all adults except Andy Dick. Andy Dick's just whatever he is.
Yeah. Have you had him on recently? Where is he? Yeah.
I had him on once. I'm like, that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ran him at the Comedy Store the other day. He's banned now.
Is he banned again?
Yeah, he licked Earl Skakel's face, and there's drunk Andy, and when drunk Andy's around, you just got to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell the difference.
It's two different guys.
He's very aggressive.
Yeah.
He gets like bangs in the car window, and you're like, oh no, it's drunk Andy.
Yeah. And sober Andy's a fucking sweetheart.
Wonderful guy.
And so funny, man.
He's a hilarious guy. We did scenes together where we had to do the take 5-6 times because I couldn't stay straight.
Yeah.
I kept cracking.
Well, you can't stay straight with Andy.
Yeah.
This episode or this rundown is in turn, I'm taking your brought to you by away and I'm making it brought to you by the episode of Tom Green. With that Andy Dick was on, and Andy Dick acted like Tom Green, and Tom Green acted like Andy Dick.
One of the best Tom Green episodes.
I'm Tom Green. Definitely. I'm Tom Green. I'm Andy Dick.
I think that's the one that got the Emmy for.
It was a great bit.
Rundown is of World Championship Wrestling from April 23rd, 1988. Let's dive right in it. Let's get into it. First match, we got Sting versus David Isley. You know how that goes.
The third Isley brother.
Sting wins with the Scorpion. Come on.
Well, isn't that special?
I don't think... did he?
Second big match.
Big.
The in-ring debut of the new main eventer that's been lighting the world on fire, the Midnight Rider.
It's pronounced the Midnight Ride, duh.
He's in there versus Big Bear Kali. He wins with a DDT on a chair. After he wins, he gives him another DDT on a chair. Once again, it's a total fucking crapshoot in this company. What's a disqualification and what's not? You never know.
Well, Midnight Rider's a good guy.
It's up to the ref's discretion. Yeah, and Dick Murdoch's a bad guy, and he also never gets disqualified. I guess you just have to be in Texas tag teams.
Texas, yeah.
Speaking of tag teams, next match is a tag team match. The Fantastics are in there versus Kerry Stevens and Snake Watson.
Snake Watson.
They win with their version of the rocket launcher, the Filmation rocket launcher. It's the worst version. This week...
Let's go, Ghostbusters.
This week, there's no contact on the rocket launcher.
Let's
he doesn't even flip his dick.
Let's go, go.
He puts his hands up and pretends like he's throwing them. The guy just jumps.
They had a talking monkey named Tracy.
There's no rocket launcher. Dr. Death is in the next match. He's in there against Bob Riddle.
He is a machine.
Which I thought was a weird ring name. Bob Riddle. If you that's all your name already, just change it to Rob Riddle. At least you'll have some alliteration. There's one letter and you have a name that sounds better as a ring name.
I'm going to tell you, though.
Uh-huh.
Keep an eye on this Bob Riddle.
Okay.
He's impressing me. I think we're finally getting...
He got put down with the Oklahoma Stampede.
We're getting WCW's version of Mike Sharp here.
Another tag team match coming up next. We got the Midnight Express in there versus Tommy Angel and Rocky King. Old stalwarts. Eaton pins Angel after the real rocket launcher.
Ooh.
The original rocket launcher. The one where the guy actually throws the guy.
Because
he's tall enough
ghost.
To do the move.
Hmm.
Next match. Six-man tag match. The six-man tag team champions, the Powers of Pain and Ivan Koloff, are in there versus Max MacGyver, Bob Emery,
Sha-na-na-na,
and Curtis Booger Thompson. Koloff gets the pin after just a leg drop, but he didn't really do the damage. He was just, you know, picking the scraps after the Powers of Pain murdered this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real mugging, Matt.
It was a cool
bad for these
spiked
guys.
Suplex, though.
Oh, yeah. All sorts of power moves going on. These are some big dudes.
They should have just used that as their finisher.
But, you know, they got Ivan Koloff come in afterwards and drop that leg drop. It's like insult to injury. It's
sure.
Like, it's like the people's elbow. It was the people's elbow of the 80s. That's what they called Koloff's leg drop.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people called it that. Al Perez, unfortunately, is in our next match versus Larry Stevens.
He's just as good as Nikita Koloff, Nate, okay?
I got to say, I was really... at this point, I was like thinking, like, hey, this is moving better than most WCW shows. Like, I'm not really minding it. And then we got back-to-back Al Perez and Nikita Koloff matches, and I was like, huh, snooze factor. Al Perez beats Larry Stevens with his spinning toe hold. Nikita beats Crusher Knault with a sickle, like, right out of the gate.
Crusher Knault.
Nikita Koloff is a good guy. What a bust. Not good. World Tag Team title match next. That's right. Something with some sort of consequence is happening on this show.
But it's going to be for like 5 minutes, right?
Can you believe it? We got it's just the a champions, 5 minute match. Wyndham and Luger in there versus Arn and Tully. Double A ends up getting the pin after Wyndham turns on his partner. Turns on Lex Luger.
This all took place in like 5 minutes?
Lariats him out of his boots. No, this took place over a long period of time.
Man. Really?
This is a good chunk of this episode. Was this big tag team title match.
Wow.
Wyndham leaves J.J. Dillon. He throws up the four fingers. Arn and Tully win. It's chaos.
That's a big story. That's got to be the end of the episode
next
right
segment,
there. What?
We got a backstage confrontation. The writer, he's going after Wyndham. The horseman pounce on him. And then the whole locker room's in a brawl. And then everybody's pulling each other apart. It's chaos. And then finally the show's over because you ended on the big angle, like everybody's...
That's got to be it.
Oh, wait, I'm getting word no.
What's up?
Suddenly we cut to a Kevin Sullivan promo for no reason. And
where, on this show?
And he's talking again, even though all of this chaotic shit has just happened. Tag titles have changed hands. Got a big turn, and there's chaos, everybody's brawling.
Well, we got a big turd, all right.
Instead, let's do a Mike Rotunda versus Sam Bass match. I'm not going to lie to you. I couldn't pay attention to this show anymore. After they brought me up so high and I thought it was over and I was getting ready to turn it off and then there was literally more show, I stopped paying attention.
I got three
I'm sure that Rotunda won.
You want me to take over on this
sort
one
of
for
suplex?
You want me to? I'll take it over for you.
Let's,
for our final match here.
Oh,
I got three specific notes.
Forehead's just leaning under this microphone.
Well, I've got the names of the guys in the match and then I got, why the fuck is there still more with about five question marks? Next sentence, George Papadopoulos cries.
Okay, that's the dad from Webster, right?
Yeah, JR made a reference.
Oh, okay.
And my final...
Sorry, I missed that, JR.
Final point here is suplex, I don't know, Samoan drop.
Had to have been something like that.
It was a Samoan drop.
One of the two Rotunda wins. So then, weirdly, that's the final segment of the... Oh, no, wait. That's not even the final segment of the show. Now what we're going to do is we're going to replay the tag title match that we've already watched. Don't worry, they're not replaying the whole thing, though. They're just going to replay the second half of the match, so only like a good 12 minutes or something. So
even though the match just happened 10 minutes ago?
The thing that we just saw 10 minutes ago, we're now watching again in case you forgot about it.
Shame on you, WCW, NWA. That's why Raw is 3 hours now.
Yeah, that's...
you empowered them.
They invented it. They invented the replaying everything ad nauseum to stretch your show out as long and make it as interminable to watch as
you
possible.
You remember that big angle we just had on our show?
You know.
What if we just show it again?
Right before this commercial break?
Let's just show it again.
I'm sure
real
you
quick.
Haven't forgotten. Then, you know. We get some footage of Wyndham actually leaving with the horseman.
Which is kind of cool.
It was a nice final shot. Him putting on a horseman coat and getting in their limo and then pulls away.
It was a real look into the future for WCW.
And that's the rundown of this episode of WCW.
It was a real look into the future for 90s wrestling where everything lived and died happening out on that ramp where
vehicles were coming in.
Who was getting out of a limousine? Who was getting into a limousine?
They really hung their hat on
90s
intrigue
wrestling.
Limousines quite a bit in the late 90s.
Well, you know, as Adam Sandler was heard to say, must be somebody important like Burt Reynolds or something.
We're getting a lot of Sandman in on this show lately. It's really making me want to catch up on his Netflix output. We've been talking a big game about loving the Sandman and no results, no actually watching Sandler's work.
I think this is how we get through the winter without either hanging ourselves or psoriasis of the liver.
Mm-hmm.
is we lean on the Sandman.
Yeah,
this
he'll get us through it. He's a jelly man. There's no care in the world. That guy wears board shorts anywhere he goes.
Have you watched that new one where like his kid is marrying Chris Rock's kid? And I'm sure like
he's... Oh, I want to now. I bet there's a lot of really out of touch racial humor in that no one else would do these days. But Adam Sandler's in his Adam Sandler bubble. So he thinks that like 90s gay panic or like racial panic humor is still things people are doing.
It's that sweet...
God, I wish I lived in a bubble like that rich guy.
Weird,
rich,
like...
rich bubble.
They do the white people overreacting to everything black people do, which is clearly racist.
Yeah, but and I then gotta they admit, do, that's what I do.
But then they do the whole black people thinking everything white people do is weird, which is also racist.
But not true, because white people are not weird. They're totally normal. I'm not saying that's a double standard. White people are fucking boring. I'm throwing that out there.
Okay, all right.
You want to pretend like anything white people are fucking doing is like outlandish? No. They're going with the most boring fucking pot, except for goths. Goths, I think, are the one big, like, fuck goths. You. That big, one big middle finger white people are sticking in the air.
Yeah.
God bless you, goths.
Keeping it weird.
Let's get into that five count.
I was just thinking about goth kids, but yeah, okay.
Gotta be quick about this. We gotta make this five count happen.
I gotta pick out five?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotta go all the way through.
So the show starts. We got a little cut in from something that happened at a live event.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh,
I always get that cold open.
Yeah, I'm like,
that completely out of context thing that they play before
that's
the credits.
Nothing new. They do this every week. But then they throw it to the live show and they're still in Jacksonville.
Mm.
And I'm like, hot damn, we made it out of the studios. This
Absolutely.
Could be an exciting show,
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And then, they make it all the way to the first match, which is Sting in a squash match, immediately followed by an in-ring interview. And that's when
formula stands,
it just,
man.
Yeah, it all set down on my chest like a million pounds. It's the same old, same old.
I gotta say, though, one of my points was just talking to this thing and just how refreshing I felt like this episode was for not being in the studio. At least it looks a little bit more big league. At least you don't have all those weird problems
of the same
where
weirdos.
People are standing 10 feet away from each other, pretending like there's no way to get at each other, or like the weird things where people are cheering for people in the ring who are waiting to wrestle while an interview is happening. Yeah. Like, you got enough room to actually have a wrestling show out here in this thing. And you get, I enjoyed during the Fantastics, patented, you know, coming down to the ring where they hug and slap hands with everybody. There was like three times as many fucking just disgusting ring rats and like weird hillbillies to check out during that. And I was like, cool, a big arena. This there's so many more awful people in the audience to put my eyeballs on.
That's going to piggyback right there into my number two. Mm-hmm. This is moving quickly. You like this?
This is what
going to be the shortest episode ever. I wrote it down right here. 6 minutes, 34 seconds. Huge tits, all capitals.
Oh man, I wrote about it too. And then later on, big tits in the front row comes back because Flair's like, hey, check out
that
chick with those big tits over there. Have her hop the rail and just come over here and
stand
by me while I cut my promo.
She's got two decent looking friends as well.
Bring them all over.
So I just want to give a shout out to
during that first match, my the David Isley squash. My one note from it is white top in the front row has some big hair and some big ass titties.
Yeah.
I guess wouldn't be any. Oh. Wouldn't be the Christmas shopping season if the stores were any less hotter than they are. Whew, it is warm in here.
Well, you have your coat on.
Yes. Oh, do I? How did that happen?
Because it's cold out?
Yes. It is. It's a bit nipply out. I mean nippy out. What did I say? Nipple? There is a nip in the air, though.
Can I take something out for you?
Clear shot of her, like I said.
She was right over JR's shoulder when he was talking. And I was
6 minutes and 34 seconds.
Zooming on those things like a laser.
Right before they throw to the Bear Collie Midnight Rider match.
Mm-hmm.
They just have this nice little, them standing
it's
outside
like
of the ring shot.
Chekhov's titties right
just,
there. They just, they plopped them in the background there during that little, like, you know, talking segment. And then boom, they bring them back around. Second act when Flair's out there cutting a promo.
Yeah, it was. It's just a shout out to that rack and just the ring rats in general that were a real star of this.
Yeah,
this episode.
Jacksonville had some quality fucking hooch out there, man.
Aside from the Flair interview, like you just spoke of, there was multiple ones that they framed along certain spots of the audience, and mm-hmm, there was always mm-hmm. at least one to two decent.
Yeah, and also a lot of like awkward braced faced teenage girls who were like losing their shit Beatlemania style.
Yeah,
whenever there was like a sweaty wrestler around.
I really enjoyed during the Ric Flair one where they had those three like scientifically hot women,
mm-hmm.
like 1980s spring break hot.
Oh man, they've been on so many spring breaks at this point in 2018, but every year they're still down there.
And the thing I really liked was directly behind Flair was a super nerdy girl, but she was like the cool like 80s movie like, oh wait, if you clean this chick up, she's actually really hot.
Whole Molly Ringwald
type. Yeah, and she just had just like a plain like 80s bob haircut with like big huge 80s glasses.
Yeah, you're speaking my language. Definitely.
And looked like some braces, but it looked like she had some big knockers swimming all around loose under a white t-shirt.
One of these days she's going to figure out how to show those things off, and then
her whole
world's going to change.
She kept throwing a four but to the ground, like to four horsemen.
The balls on this girl.
But she would like, you know, undulate, like shake her arm up and down, and then that's when I was seeing some loosies.
Wow,
some movement in the shirt.
This show wasn't even shot in HD either, far from it.
No,
this is 1988 cameras we're talking about, people.
And again,
this man's vision is incredible.
I hate to, you know, keep tooting our own horns, but toot toot.
Wait, you saw another set of toot toots?
No. This is about how great you and I are. And you just alluded to it. Like I said, we're watching this so you don't have to. And then we're watching it. And just like you said, our attention to detail. This is gritty VHS quality wrestling we're watching here.
It's amazing what we pick out given the low quality of the image and how little I'm actually paying attention to the show as we watch it.
Speaking of which,
we're doing great work.
And whippets. Last week, when I commented on Dino Bravo's shit-stained trunks, buddy of mine that I work with was like, you are absolutely right.
Oh, yeah.
Those are shit stains.
I saw that Duke.
Yeah.
Duke was all over these fucking trunks. Dino Bravo, shame on you.
It's, you remember the Where's Waldo books?
Remember them well. I could tell you where Waldo is on each one. Tell me the volume. Tell me which puzzle.
So there were the people they'd buy a book. Okay, the beach one. Where was he on the beach?
Lower left corner, eating a hot dog under the purple umbrella.
Yeah, those tents. People kept thinking of the tents.
It confused you. The tents are just the same pattern as a shirt.
So some people would do the Where's Waldo books and just be like, oh, I found Waldo, next page. Oh, I found
now
Waldo, next page. The real fans would go and they'd find the hidden stuff. They're like, ooh, can you find this?
Where are Waldo's ring rats?
Yeah.
I want to pick them all out.
That's the game we're playing. Like, we don't just find Waldo. We get the extras. You're welcome.
From another one of my points was happening early in these matches. I was noticing we had a lot of uppity jobbers going on. Fucking Sting's supposed to have a 30-second squash against David Isley. In the middle of Sting whooping this guy's ass, he just stops selling for a minute and just starts like bicep posing at the crowd, like doing some like heel jawing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell are you doing, man? This ain't that kind of match.
No.
Sting instantly just takes hold of his head and just throws him in the corner and just like, quit doing that. Like, what the fuck are you thinking?
He went to do that big elbow splash on him,
mm-hmm.
and he rolls out of the way.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I'm a smart man.
Trying to get his fucking shit in. It was like, no, you're not getting your shit in against Sting. Sting wrestles 30-second squashes.
Did you notice?
You do nothing. You're a nobody. You're a body out there.
Even though he missed that elbow drop, that high-jumping elbow drop, he's in the air for so fucking long, man.
Mad hops.
He clapped twice, and it wasn't like I'm in the air, clap, clap.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's like in the air and was like, I'm coming down with an elbow, clap, clap, and then the elbow.
Man, he got Woody Harrelson and White Man Can't Jump fucking skills, I'll tell you that
much
right now.
It's impressive.
I think Woody Harrelson was all about the threes in that movie.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That Fantastics match as well. Fucking Snake Watson just starts trying to get his some offense in, and like once again do some jawing, and then fucking Fulton and Rogers just start slapping the taste out of his fucking mouth, man. They put him in his place Ole Anderson style, like real quick, like, no, you're a jobber. Quit fucking gesticulating at the crowd. Quit thinking you're going to get offense in. Oh, it was gross. They were paintbrushing him. They were fucking digging their heels into his face, like, and they didn't let him even like position himself at any point the entire rest of the match. Like, they had him by the neck and the head, and like, I'm gonna lay you here and then I'm gonna do something on you, and they just forcefully put his head exactly where it needed to be. Like, he didn't make any of his own movements the entire rest of that fucking match. Snake Watson, the Fantastics, real pros, man. I saw they were just out there with some jobber who didn't know what his job was, and they fucking took
like
control.
Young veterans out there.
Beat the shit out of this guy and just yanked him around everywhere he needed to be.
A couple of ring generals.
Good work, Fantastics. That's what you got to do. It made you look like heels because you were so aggressive, but whatever. Nobody's going to care that you're picking on fat fucking Snake Watson.
Speaking of making you look like a heel, my number three is our introduction to the Midnight Rider.
Must be talking about Dusty or Hogan if we're talking about good guys who only act like heels.
All right. So first of all, asshole comes out, does all of Dusty's offense, does his dumb dances. They do an interview with him. He does Dusty's dumb quotes. It's Dusty fucking Rhodes.
That's your opinion.
I don't get it, man.
Barry Windham's got his mask now, so I don't know. Maybe soon we'll find out who the Midnight Rider is, but as of this point, it's still a mystery. Sure, a lot of people have the theory that it's Dusty Rhodes, but it's just a theory until we... You know, actually, too, like, this whole thing, what they were trying to seemingly do this week with him fucking hanging Tully Blanchard with a literal fucking noose, which... That's some good guy shit right there.
Oh, yeah, that's how the show opened. That's
beating
right.
Beating up Big Bear Collie, like, fucking, DDT's onto the steel chair. It could be kind of cool that, like, if they wanted to do this angle of, like, ooh, this is Dusty Rhodes going into his other persona, and, like, he's much more dangerous and vicious now. But once again, just nobody knows how they're selling this. Half the time they're selling this angle like that. The other time they're selling it like a comedy angle where Dusty's pulling one over and we're not supposed to know who he is. Like, is Dusty gone crazy? Is Dusty being like a snarky little douchebag? Like,
this was
everybody's reacting to it differently. Every week the storytelling around it's different. The execution on it sucks. Dusty. Also, being like super violent and like destructive when you're in the Midnight Rider persona might work out cooler if Dusty didn't look so fucking low rent in that outfit.
I thought it looked pretty cool.
You think his black sports coat and like cheap ass fucking generic wrestling mask and just fat guy shoved into some jeans look is.
Don't worry about it.
Is what
see
a
what
dangerous
they were wearing?
Badass looks like.
Yeah, I like the coat, I think. I enjoy coats.
That was a really bad coat for an out of control cowboy drifter.
Also,
I've never seen a cowboy drifter wear anything like that.
Another
Magnum's brown duster is cool though.
Another mad props to my super attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
You left one part of his outfit out.
Okay.
What's on his hands?
I don't know.
Some gloves.
A couple of gloves. Fingerless
you know what those
gloves?
Are? They're fingerless.
You're a big fan of fingerless
well,
gloves.
Well, he cut the fingers off because those are clearly his calf cutter cutting barbed wire handling gloves.
Got to get some more use out of those things. You can't just buy gloves for one match and then throw them away.
It's the same gloves, man. But yeah, this asshole beats up the bad guy really badly to like the point where everybody's like, oh god, this guy might be injured, and then all the other jobbers come out to be like, we got to get this guy, you know, back safe, and then Dusty's like, I'm gonna beat all you two, y'all dead, I'm gonna tan your hide.
Midnight Rider.
I'm sorry, the Midnight Rider's like, I'm gonna tan your hide.
So once again, is Dusty a face, is Dusty a heel? Who could fucking tell? Is this guy dangerous, or is he just Dusty pulling a joke? Who could fucking tell?
Also, settle on a name for your horse.
Oh, they change names for the horse?
I think it's like Diablo Double, Diablo Deuce, Diablo Dos.
It's always something like that.
Yeah, it was Diablo Canyon, just like where he was from.
I think Diablo Canyon's where he's from.
I'm from Diablo Canyon.
Diablo. They named the place where he's from after his horse. It makes perfect sense. I got like another one that I really liked.
Okay.
It was Dr. Death. This is going to be a real quick one.
Yeah.
Dr. Death cut that promo, you know, right?
That Psycho Sid style promo.
Fucking loved it. I loved it because he's cutting a promo on Ric Flair, and he says to Flair, "Listen, Flair, I want you to look deep, deep into my eyes." And as he's saying this, his eyes are just so squinty because he's just a fucking squinty-faced idiot that you literally can't see his eyes.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, when you tell people that, you, like, bug out your eyes and look crazy, and you look at them right into the camera. That's what you do. You don't tell somebody to look deep, deep into your eyes when you're so squinty. You couldn't make out your fucking pupils. Dr. Death, you're a real dummy.
He sounded like a mashup of a Scott Steiner and Sid Vicious.
Yeah. He's going for that Sid Vicious intensity. He had all that early Scott Steiner, like, pauses and dead air going on.
Yeah.
It was a fine, fine promo.
It was a real good show.
No, it wasn't. They need to get this guy a manager. We've seen, like, 5 or 6 promos from now, and they're the drizzling shits. They're the worst. He can't talk for himself.
You could have just packaged this guy the way they currently are with Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, get Paul Heyman with him. I agree.
Just anybody that could talk a little bit, and then just be like, this guy's a badass. Watch out. And then all he had to do was go in the ring and be a badass.
They figured it out when they had Ed Ferrara coming out with him in the late 90s doing that Jim Ross impression.
Okay, well, hold
chugging,
on now.
Chugging bottles of barbecue sauce on every ring post like Steve Austin. That shit was golden.
I liked that, except I couldn't fully get into it because he was feuding with one of my number one guys at the time.
Who's that?
Canada and Mexico's greatest hero.
Vampiro. Oh, wow.
Because he was also at the time aligned with one of my favorite punk rock bands, The Misfits.
Yeah.
Even though this was Michael Graves' era of Misfits. Yeah. I know.
I was going to say, that's what you prefer. That's the only era Misfits that you like.
Speaking of people talking funny, my next point is Jim Cornette losing his shit when they finally tell him the extent of the 10 lashes match.
Oh, no. His guys lose. He's taking 10 whippings, man.
He does. He's talking. He's like, I'm going to give the whippings. They're going to give the whippings. And they're like, No, like, you're going to get the whipping. He's like, no. Like, I'm going to whip them. And, you know, whatever. And they're like, nah, Corny. It's in the contract. If your team loses, they get to whip you.
It's not the Midnight's taking the belt lashes. It's you, Jim Cornette.
To which he gives out a high-pitched version of the Hank Hill, but it's like super high-pitched, and then he just fires immediately.
Can't wait till I'm old enough to make that noise.
I'll kill you. To JR, I'm guessing.
And you know those two double cheeseburgers were extra cheese only, nothing else on them.
Okay. Just extra cheese only, that's it.
Okay. Extra cheese, nothing else on them. We figured you'd have that already by the time we got up here. Didn't know what? Didn't know whether to fix it or not.
We thought we were ribbing?
We wouldn't have ordered it if we didn't want it fixed. Goddamn!
Fucking ugly bitch!
You've been waiting 15 minutes to motherfucking line, you stupid son of a bitches, anyway! We order goddamn $30 worth of fucking food and sit here for 15 minutes and they don't even start fixing it till we get up here? Because they think we're fucking joking? We've been sitting here 15 minutes! They don't even start the order!
Fucking little cunt.
Damn straight.
Fucking thing.
I thought we were joking.
15 fucking minutes, gotta drive 200 fucking miles.
I thought we were joking.
God damn it.
You ugly fucking bitch.
JR's not writing these contracts, man.
But he's the one that convinced them to sign a contract, according to him.
I never trust a man from Oklahoma. I've always said that.
Oh, that's common knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So I just liked cornets yelling.
It was good. My next point here is just how shocked I was when we got a tag team title match on this weekly TV show after weeks and weeks and weeks of nothing of any import happening, no storylines getting,
Oh, I'm sorry, the Crockett Cup.
Except for when Dusty Rhodes had to turn into the Midnight Rider. It's been like 6 weeks of that. An actual match, though, an in-ring thing that matters, a title's being defended, and it was a really good match.
What about the Crockett Cup?
Horseman shit. Crockett Cup was awesome, too. Who won that?
All of it.
Okay.
Because they recapped it so well.
We never got a recap of how that ended.
No, there was no mention of the Crockett Cup.
After
there was not one mention.
2 months of building up to the Crockett Cup, it was going to happen next week, which would have been in between this show and the last show, and they didn't even tell us who won this fucking thing.
Nah.
We didn't tell us who won the Prince of Darkness match, and tell us who won any of the matches they spent all the last few weeks fucking hyping up. That's just what a disconnect they
have. Ron Garvin got hurt, though.
How you use
I'm not sure
television
how.
In 1988. They still don't know how the fuck to use television.
But they used it okay. Enough-ish.
They certainly don't know how to enough-ish. Structure a television program still. That's moving into my last point. We've already talked about it, but how egregious it was that they gave us the biggest thing we've gotten on this probably show ever that we've ever seen. Not only a tag title match where the tag titles changed hands, but a heel turn. Somebody joining the Horsemen, betraying his best friend. A huge locker room brawl, chaos, and then they have the fucking gall to do an extended denouement. Where we're just watching Varsity Club matches for no fucking reason.
Varsity Club.
Why?
Because they needed a chance to shower up so they could walk the limo in different clothes.
Do you not understand how you structure a fucking TV show with a beginning, a middle, an end, and then after your end, it's the fucking end.
It's the end, yeah.
You go out on a climax. You leave people wanting more. You don't blow off the fucking climax of your episode and then have 20 minutes left and then just twiddle your thumbs for another 20 minutes and let people get bored of what you're doing. You want people looking forward to tuning in next week. This isn't like, oh yeah, sure, it was early on in doing television. They had to figure this stuff out later. No, these are the basic fundamentals of storytelling. The fact that they didn't have it down is embarrassing. Just fucking embarrassing. The people making these TV shows are morons.
Southern fried morons. They come back to the arena and it's just dead. Absolutely dead.
Literally, people like, should we leave? It's over,
like,
right?
That's it. And then like Varsity Club
comes
out.
They haven't turned on the house lights yet, so I don't know. Let's keep standing around here.
But people are just like politely like looking at the ring like, is this part of the, is this
probably
part of
in
it?
The same way I was looking at my television and had to hit the pause button and be like, wait, how much time is left on this? I was ready to like for it to go to credits and me to be like, oh man, best episode they've ever did. Other than that Al Perez and Nikita Koloff snoozer of like 10 minutes, like everything was fine. But then like, ooh, what a fucking bummer that last 20 minutes of a match that couldn't possibly live up to what came before it. And then just replay for not even just like,
it
here's
could've
2 minutes of highlights of the crazy thing that happened. A fucking like 12 minute replay of everything that happened. What? That's insane. What the fuck did I watch?
Like, people should be talking about it like in the same breath as like Andre slapping and ripping Hogan's gold chain, mm-hmm, or like the mega powers exploding. Like, that's the level of important it should have been.
Sure.
But it just got sidetracked by its own bullshit. Just like, what?
It's just like that episode where Dusty.
Hold on a minute.
Dusty got fucking suspended from wrestling at the beginning of the episode. And then by the end of the episode, he was already back as the Midnight Rider. Like, no, you end your episode with Dusty getting suspended. It's a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And then you milk it for a couple weeks. People being like, what's going to happen with no Dusty around?
Don't just show him again 20 minutes
later.
The
heels are running roughshod over the faces because the locker room leader's gone, blah, blah, blah. And then the Midnight Rider shows up like a couple weeks later. That's fucking storytelling. What they do on this TV show is shit.
Yeah. People always make fun of the WWE product these days, saying like they don't know what the fuck they're doing storyline and they're just making it up as they go.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's true.
But they always have an idea of how they want to start it and how they want to end it.
Like, and individual episodes.
Yeah.
Not full-on storylines.
No, yeah, right. No. Idea. I just mean from an episode standpoint.
Yeah, sure.
And every once in a while, they'll get a hot ending, and people will be like, oh, did you see that?
And then, like, they're all like, oh, I'm back into watching wrestling again. I told you it was going to get good again.
It's not.
You need
it's
to start
not.
Watching
You're
it.
Wrong.
And I'm like,
You're absolutely
no,
wrong.
It's not good again. They lucked into one good episode. Wait till next week.
Yeah, we talked about it before. NWA, WCW. There's literally a handful of episodes that we've watched in our year plus of being a show that have like ended well.
Two or three. It's no more than three.
I don't.
I'll tell you, it's definitely.
I don't
no
think
more
it's
than
even
three.
I don't think.
No,
it's
I think
even
it's two.
Three.
I think we've seen two.
The pull apart between the Fantastics and the Midnighters.
Yep. And then I don't know
and
what.
And something else.
But I believe
I
there was one more.
Well.
I vaguely remember
there should
there
be
being
at least
one
more. Yeah. So
I like I like the wrestling in that tag match though. The Horsemen were really milking those hot tags. Every time they just like. Would let Luger get so close to tagging, and then like one of them would just do like a heroic fucking like leap to cut him off again. The crowd would just get so deflated. Classic tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
That Arn and Tully, nobody better.
And in the same whatever. Anytime Tully was getting close to Arn and Barry or whoever Lex would do something to like break up their tag. Crowd would just like get even louder.
Sure.
Like, yeah, you cut him off at the pass again.
It was always short lived.
Tully was just selling the shit.
Only thing is, just like
out of those tag attempts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tully is very underrated for just his body language and his sort of just like physical acting when he's in the match.
Yeah,
he's some
like
of the best shit that
he
does.
He's like a little less vocal Ric Flair, to be honest with
mm-hmm.
you.
But then you know it ends with Barry Windham turning on Luger. Body slamming him and then lariating him and then like, you know, giving up the titles. And you got to wonder like, well, then why did Barry Windham and the Horsemen beat the shit out of each other for 15 minutes leading up to this turn?
Here's the thing.
Just to be like extra sneaky and to rub it in the Luger's face
they
beat each other's asses.
You missed an important part here. The final seed was planted in this match. Which Barry's
so
mind.
So you're saying he didn't go into this match with deciding to do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. So the whole big finish is what? Luger gets taken out on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Barry's left there to fend for himself. And he keeps trying to tag to Luger, and Luger's not there. And they keep showing JJ on the outside. He's in Barry's corner now.
He's getting
he's
in his
left,
ear.
He's left the Horseman corner. He's in Barry Luger's corner. Uh-oh. Oh, as I knock over Ric Flair and the Stinger. He's in their corner. No Luger. So Barry's making it over there, only to find J.J. Dillon. And J.J. keeps saying, I told you he wouldn't be there for you.
Oh, man.
I told you he wouldn't
See,
be there
good.
For you.
It all.
And that's amazing
all
attention
solid
to
stuff.
Detail because you had a legit question. I thought the same thing because I knew what happened in that match. And I was like, why the fuck are they beating each other up so bad for so long?
So you guys,
but that one little thing.
I thought back to it and I was like, once the turn happened, like I knew it was happening. It was
right.
Like, you know, I knew how the storyline ended. But then like, I was like, well, they should have worked in something where, like, you know, Windham and the Horsemen never actually touched throughout the match, and they definitely didn't do that. Windham was going at them hard for these comebacks.
Hard, yeah.
So, yeah, I just missed this shit, I guess, where he was getting talked to by JJ in the corner and was just like, fucking carrying Luger like fucking 10 pounds of luggage everywhere I go is this is not good for me. This is... I got to get out of this.
He's out. He's on the ground on the outside, and JJ gets into his corner, and he just says, I told you he wouldn't be there for you. I told you he wouldn't
you know who
be,
will
there
be there
for
you. JJ Dillon and the Four Horsemen.
Fuck yeah.
They're Horsemen. Always there for each other.
Horsemen for just, life.
It's like ducks fly together in those Mighty Ducks movies. Horses fly together.
I love the Mighty Ducks.
You got any more points? Because that about wraps up all my points.
No, I'm just thinking about the Mighty Ducks now. One of them...
Who's your favorite Mighty Duck of all time?
Well, you know I'm partial to Lee Aberman because, you know, he played on my eighth grade softball.
That's true. And you are into gingers.
Team. Yeah. Well, wait, huh? I liked the chick that went on to play Paul Rudd's girlfriend in Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The original girl Mighty Duck, and then they added Mo the Cat Gaffney, and I was like, well, there's two female Mighty Ducks, and like, it's not really cool to be the female Mighty Duck.
I really hated Eric Banks because I didn't understand Cake Eater.
Oh, yeah. What is that insult?
Ooh, that reminds me.
Eating cake is cool.
Davey R. Scheister and I need to start getting some Cake Eater stuff going with Teddy Bizkliz in his hockey career.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
If you haven't been throwing any Mighty Ducks chirps at him up to this point, you've really been slacking.
I hate the Southern white guy that they bring in, like the second one.
Oh, the cowboy guy who's lassoing people.
Yeah, I don't care.
He really looked like a kid who was in my class at the time, Joe Bomaghetti. So we really got to make fun of him over looking exactly like that kid when that movie came out. That was a lot of fun.
I don't like the aggressive nature that they brought Keenan or Kel in.
Oh, see, dropping a fucking megastar like Keenan into your movie, I feel like you gotta do it like that.
Yeah, you think so?
I feel like, yeah, Keenan dropped in like an atom bomb.
Y'all soft.
Give him his own original fucking hockey move that he does that blows everybody's minds.
Oh, that was crazy.
When you added a second Bash Brother, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I loved there being two Bash. That's what the thing. If you're making a sequel, how are you going to make things bigger? We got a guy with a killer slap shot in the first one. We got to do a crazy slap shot in the second one.
Knuckle puck.
We got a real bruiser in the first one. We need to have two bruisers in the second one.
Yeah.
D2 the Mighty Ducks, underrated sequel, man.
The second Bash Brother then goes on to be in that movie, How to Date a Thousand Girls.
I don't know what that movie is, and I'm not picturing who that guy is. I'm sort of picturing him looking like if Heath Ledger like got hit with gamma rays and sort of became a Hulk. In my mind, that's sort of what he looks like.
No, because really. In real life, Heath Ledger was probably bigger. This guy just looked big because it was a bunch of kids. No, it's just this guy was working around a bunch of children. Like, really? We would look like 6-foot giants.
I'm not so sure that's true. I get intimidated around kids sometimes.
Some pretty big 12-year-olds, yeah. You're right.
These kids these days, what are they feeding them?
Oh, jeez, I don't know.
They're all Keenan-sized.
We're going to find out what they're feeding them when they tell us on these commercial breaks.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Shh, there's new brighter colors in new Fruity Pebbles. But if Barney sees the brighter colors, he'll turn into
a fruity monster.
Uh-oh, too late.
Brighter reds, oranges, yellows.
Have some, Barney. New Post Fruity Pebbles cereals, part of a balanced breakfast.
Mmm, tastes as fruity as it looks.
Now the bright colors are turning me into the fruity monster.
I'll give him new Fruity Pebbles. Tastes as fruity as it looks.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, heroes in a half shell. They run the ninja arts from the master, the rep. And now these four green guys can
the Shredder, sworn enemy of the Turtles.
It feels so good to be so bad.
With his henchmen, the dreaded Foot Soldiers, the mutants Bebop and Rocksteady.
What do I do with them?
Destroy them!
Oh, what turtle soup!
Ninja Turtles.
From Playmates.
Three count me when you got thoughts about wrestling. I'll help you sort them out.
Oh, man.
Three count me.
No, I definitely just not.
What happened?
This is just very soothing. This is like a lullaby.
Apologies. Dean Portman from the Mighty Ducks was not in that 100 Girls movies. But to tie it into last week's show, one of his big first hits besides Newsies for the Disney company.
Let me tell you, earlier on tonight.
Yeah.
That big blizzard happened, and I had some internet outages. It's a good thing it came back so we could bing Dean Portman during that break and get all the lowdown on what's going on with this guy.
Well, to tie it into last week's episode, one of his big breaks was on the hit show Bustin' Loose.
It is sweet. You almost got the best of me. Now you
I'm feeling good, I'm
Well, you see,
I'm not so sure I've ever heard of the hit show Bustin' Loose.
Hit television actor Jimmy Walker.
Oh, dynamite.
Is Sonny Barnes, an independent and carefree foster father to a group of kids.
That sounds... How long did this show last? That sounds like something that should have been on for years and everybody should know about.
26 full episodes.
That's a lot of episodes, I guess. They got a full season's order.
87 to 88.
Good for them, I guess.
Even had Little Richard on.
A little early for me to know who Jimmy Walker is, I think. That's probably why I missed it.
Dynamite!
I was only, what, 6'7" at the time? I was probably just getting into Good Times reruns, just quite frankly.
Mm-mm.
So to piggyback off of that episode of NWA WCW coming straight at you from Jacksonville, Florida, I decided we got a big heel turn happen on this episode.
Huge.
Barry Windham joining the Horsemen is a big deal. It's either the best or the second best iteration of the Horsemen there. You either got to go originals or you got to go Barry instead of Ole. Anything else pales in comparison.
Yeah.
Big moment as far as the storylines in that company goes. I was thinking off too, like what are some others that compare? Something that can stand head and shoulders with this one. What are my favorite heel turns of all time? And I was like, that's pretty simple three count idea. We've probably already done this one before. I'm pretty sure I had to go look at all our
we
other
didn't.
Episodes.
We
and
did
like
Grudge.
Yeah, and then I was like, ooh, a lot of the ones I was going to pick, like it involved heel turns.
Yeah,
and I was like
Bruno
but we did
San Martino
not do best heel turns.
And Larry Zbysko.
So, yeah, so
yeah.
I didn't pick any of the ones I picked from our most Grudge feuds episode that involved heel turns. I picked all new ones, but you know, it's fresh for us. It's a new thing. I've got three new heel turns that I've locked down as my favorite heel turns, the ones that affected me the most. I'm thinking you did the same. We're going to be able to knock out a three count here and then, you know, knock myself out and hopefully sleep for like 2 days straight.
I didn't do necessarily what stuck out to me the most or like resonated with me the
most.
You did
a poll? You're just cold calling people around the neighborhood?
A little bit. Let me ask you a question about wrestling. What do we think about it?
Everybody keeps hanging up on me. What the hell?
Marty, hello.
I gotta tell you, I saw that Creed 2 the other day. There's some of the best, like, Sylvester Stallone rambling and undercutting his own point mid-sentence Rocky shit that, like, has been in any Rocky movie in this Creed 2. He's constantly just like, oh, you know, I was thinking maybe you're going to do this. But probably you shouldn't. It's a really dumb idea now that I think about it.
I got to watch. I still haven't seen the first Creed.
Man, Creed and Creed 2. I watched the first one again yesterday and then went to see the second one. That's why I was so pumped up in the fucking weight room all day because I was just watching Rocky movies and lifting weights and I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop.
Getting stronger.
How can you watch those montages and not just want to fucking push yourself?
I love those, man.
Yeah, Creed 2, not as good as Creed 1. Nobody expected it to be, but fits into that Rocky sequel mold very well. Very
See,
well.
My problem is the little lady hasn't seen any Rocky movies.
Yeah.
And I feel bad, like, just jumping right into Creed. Like, as a Rocky fan,
well,
I'm like, no, you need to watch
this first.
You
feel bad just, like, making her jump into professional wrestling that she doesn't have decades and decades of knowledge about?
No, there's a lot of times I try to get her to not watch it, and she's like, no, you can just watch it.
Yeah,
I don't mind.
Clearly, she's got a problem. She'll watch anything or at least sit around on the couch doodling around in her phone while you watch anything you want to. No big deal.
Still a part of me, man. They're still a part of me. So the thing I went for on the heel turn list was I tried to look for what was important character-wise.
Uh-huh.
Big moments character-wise.
Okay.
Like
big progression from somebody.
Huh.
I kind of went, my rule that I sort of stuck to was that I couldn't have liked the heel turn in any way. I couldn't be like, oh, sweet, awesome heel turn. I'm totally
You're
pumped
like,
to see
this
guy
disgusting.
Go on his heel run now.
This breaks my heart.
I had to have been legitimately upset that it was happening. So I stuck to that. Things that really, quote unquote, worked me, to put it in the parlance of the internet people who are trying to put things in the parlance of wrestlers who are in turn putting things in the parlance of carnival barkers.
So these for mine are more like I remember them, I'm surprised at some point, but looking back on it now, it's like, well, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
That's important story character wise. First one.
You have a lot of different flavors here. I can feel this.
Is a guy I don't give a fuck about. I've talked multiple times.
That's rough.
About
straight shooting.
I don't give a fuck about him.
Stiff shots right here from Matto.
We talked about him on the show last week. He's Davey R. Scheister's favorite wrestler of all time.
I'm going to run out of the whiskey in this flask. I'm going to have to recharge it after this episode.
He is hero of the African-American wrestling community.
Oh, we're talking about The Undertaker.
The Undertaker.
Everybody knows that black dudes love The Taker.
Yeah.
He's
Taker.
Got those soup bones, man. Gotta love how he throws those soup bones.
Taker, except from the initial run with Brother Love, had always been synonymous.
He wasn't throwing any soup bones back then.
Synonymous?
Hippopotamus?
Yeah.
Hip-hop-anonymous?
Hip-hop-anonymous? So Taker is always with Paul Bearer, and all of a sudden this new cat comes out of the scene, and he's like, I'm weird. I'm from WCW, but I'm not the guy that I was in WCW. I'm weird now.
Vince made somebody change characters?
Yeah. He's like, my name's the Mankind. And we're like, this guy is weird. And he's been coming out, and he's been, like, giving people his fingers underneath their tongues, and some of them even, like, have, like, creamy discharge
sure.
come out of their mouths
uh-huh.
after it. You remember when they were doing that?
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Establishing the mandible claws thing.
Why did they ever stop doing that?
I don't know. I've heard Jim Cornette claim that the mandible claw was his idea, and he stole it from Dr. Richard whatever, the real guy who that Harrison Ford movie was about, the I Didn't Kill My Wife movie, The Fugitive.
Yeah?
Because that guy apparently, after getting through all that fugitive stuff in his life, later on became a professional wrestler and used his knowledge of the human body to create the mandible claw.
The Fugitive was a real story?
Oh, yeah, based on a real story.
Really?
And then that based on a real story guy later became a pro wrestler.
God, fire truck. Listen up, ladies and gentlemen. Our fugitive has been on the run for 90 minutes. Average foot speed over uneven ground, barring injuries, 4 miles an hour. That gives us a radius of 6 miles. What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area. Checkpoints go up at 15 miles. Your fugitive's name is Dr. Richard Kimball. Go get him.
What a tangled web we've
You just want to end the show right here?
Yes, I do.
Should we just WCW
we've
do it
the
right
three
way?
Count. Okay, I don't want to get any sort of lawsuits coming our way. Like,
you're right. We promised.
A three count
guys,
they didn't even get through one of their
you
counts.
You were promised a varsity club match. You're getting a varsity club match. So Taker, he's with Bear. He's got to fight this Mankind guy. And this is weird and it's crazy. And it's not just going to be a regular match. It's going to be a boiler room match.
Boiler room brawl, from
yeah,
what I remember.
Boiler room brawl. It's scary. It's spooky. It's dangerous. And so Taker's like, I'm Taker. I still got this. I got
everywhere.
Bones. I got to tell you, I'm going to Taker. And then what happens? Bam-o! Hitting the side of the head with the urn from
Mr.
Paul Bearer.
Just the stalwart. It just seemed like a part of the Undertaker package that you couldn't possibly take away from him. They're like peas and carrots, those two.
Without any of this, you never would have got Mankind's initial meteoric rise, you know, the importance there.
More like a meteoric fall right off all those tall things that he was throwing himself off of to try and get himself over.
Or just running over those stairs really fast, doing that hip bump.
Throw his knees into those stairs.
Yeah, that's probably why he doesn't walk well. Either way, it really put Mankind over. It really shook up the character of The Undertaker, and then it really allowed for
that was kind of like when Taker first had to start cutting promos for real,
right.
Wasn't it? Like before that, he kind of just only said rest in peace.
And it wasn't so much the importance of the heel turn to Bearer as much as just what it did to the character of The Undertaker.
It was time for a change, time to flesh out Taker.
And it was the first
sink or swim, Taker.
Of many changes that Taker would
you're
going to
be
come
a flash
across,
in the
you know?
Pan, or are you going to be WWE's Madonna?
He learned to talk,
he
and then he did his
Madonna.
Own thing, and then he was Ministry Taker, and then he was Biker Taker, and then he was back with Paul Bearer. But
he was fat. And then he was skinny again. You know, then he was fat again.
You got
then
Kane
he
and all that.
Again.
He's not Oprah.
He did that a lot, though.
Okay, that's fair.
Remember how fat he was in that initial American Badass run?
Oh,
he was having
yeah.
all those boring, plotting matches.
Well, that's because he started getting really fat as ministry taker.
Yeah. He's wearing all those big, heavy robes. You could really hit that catering table hard every day. You couldn't really see under all that gear.
So, it's just important.
But also, Undertaker, you know, if Paul Bearer never turned on him and he never got to branch out, he would probably today not be known as the White Oprah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a big thing to be known as.
My number one is, or number three, and these go in descending order. It's different from the five count, ladies and gentlemen.
None of this matters.
It's the one that probably has affected me the most emotionally throughout my life. Like, it was a real tearjerker of a scene. And like you were saying,
is it the end of Terminator 2?
It's when he's gives him the thumbs up as he's sinking down into that molten steel.
Watching that movie yesterday, try to keep a dry fucking eye.
Get some emotions out of you. No, it was man, we give a lot of grief to for not being the best baby face in the world, but not on this day, my friend. He was the best baby face in the world because he made me care about something I should not possibly in a million years care about. And that's SummerSlam 1990 when Sweet Sapphire turned on Dusty Rhodes. Sweet Sapphire is number one super fan of Dusty Rhodes.
And mother of Cody Rhodes.
A middle-aged woman, future mother of Cody Rhodes. Yeah. She was conceived during their few months together here on programming, where basically they were just hanging out. He suddenly had this middle-aged woman who was his number one fan with him. Who cares? Not a big thing. But then she starts getting mysterious gifts from a secret admirer.
What?
Lavish gifts, diamond rings, mink coats, things like
that. Dusty can't afford that. He's just the son
it's
of a plumber.
All leading up to SummerSlam 1990, where she's supposed to get the best gift ever. She disappears.
That D, son.
Dusty Rhodes, he's searching. He's got everybody searching for her all around the arena. He can't find her. He's so distraught over it, he gets his ass whooped by Macho King Randy Savage. This guy's destitute. He's hitting a low point here. And then he finds out the Million Dollar Man was a secret admirer. And he has stolen Sweet Sapphire away from Dusty Rhodes. This terrible valet that nobody should have cared about. But Dusty Rhodes, such a good actor on this night, cutting such good promos. I was 9 years old at the time. He had me tearing up, man. He's Sweet Sapphire, Barry Windham style, got in the Million Dollar Man's limo, and they drove away. Dusty was chasing after the limo, yelling like, Sapphire, come back!
Oh, Sapphire, wow, Sapphire.
It was so sad. I was too young, I think, to see a man cry like that and see a grown man be desperate like that. It was just blew a lot of my mind. I offered up my innocence to her, and she paid me back in scorn. That's a line I remember Dusty Rhodes telling Mean Gene afterwards when he was just so downtrodden and so sad.
On that hot August night in Philadelphia at SummerSlam 1990, I felt humiliation. I felt rejection, and I felt betrayed when I looked out and seen Sapphire standing with Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, and I seen what dirty money can buy you, baby. And confusion reigned in the mind of Dusty Rhodes, the American dream. But now I'm steady in my mind. I know what has to be done. Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, cannot, will not, never will be bought, baby.
Got that right. Who'd want him?
You have paid the price for Dusty Rhodes. And that price is going to be... That price is going to be... That price is going to be pure hell, baby.
Million Dollar Man has made an enemy for life.
It was just that day I learned, like, grown men are fallible human beings, and women are whores who are not to be trusted.
Oh, what a pitiful sight it must have been to see Dusty Rhodes running down the ramp and up the ramp and out of the Philadelphia Spectrum, chasing my limousine, sucking up those exhaust fumes. Well, let me tell you something, Rhodes. Before it's all over and done, you won't be chasing my limo down the street. You'll be chasing my money, just like every other common man across the country. Take a look at Sweet Sapphire here. Look at the smile on her face. She has finally realized that in total subservience to me, she will be wealthier for the rest of her life than she could possibly imagine. Now, does she look sad?
Yeah, moral of the story.
Those, you know, two lessons have served me well throughout my entire life. And they were taught to me
my innocence
by Dusty Rhodes and his promo ability and his acting ability.
Because
it certainly wasn't anything Sapphire did. She just stood there with a blank look in her eyes while Dusty and DiBiase cut all the promos.
Well, she was...
But Sapphire turning on Dusty, man. My little 9-year-old ass got floored by that.
Yeah, that's a hard one to take in as a young child.
I'm over it now.
How many matches do you remember involving the European Championship?
I remember initially when Shawn Michaels won it from Davey Boy. I remember the brief period where D'Lo Brown had the title and he was coming out dressing up like different European nation stereotypes every week.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
And
this is already more than I imagined.
That's about it.
That's pretty cool.
That's all I got.
What about that time we had that big feud between Shane McMahon and X-Pac?
Oh, is the European title involved in that?
Yeah.
Feud? I don't remember that, but I do kind of remember that feud a little bit. It was Shane's first ring stuff from what I remember. And it was just like, oh, aside from those horrible looking punches he does, he's not so bad for a guy who's not trained.
He can wrestle a little bit.
At least he's willing to throw his big ass around like a moron.
This was coming out of like
Mick Foley style.
It was 97 WrestleMania or right after 97 Royal Rumble or whatever. China had already had like three heel turn, face turn, heel turns, whatever.
I'm getting whiplash.
DX was
turns.
Looking shaky. Let's put it that way.
On its last legs,
yeah.
Man.
Corporation was only getting stronger. Shane's going up against X-Pac. X-Pac's looking good. He's like, I might win an actual title in the WWF here. And H comes out. It's like, this is looking good for business. He's going to help his buddy X-Pac.
Oh, wow. Maybe you won't have to be second fiddle to me your entire career. This is your moment right here, buddy.
What does H do? Well, pedigrees.
What he does best, I'm
his
sure.
His own buddy.
Okay, yeah. He found some way to bury somebody, I'm sure.
He turns on DX. He turns on X-Pac.
And
he
then
joins
he's on Shane's
the corporation.
Shane McMahon's side, hey? I kind of remembered Shane being the good guy during that storyline for some reason. I'm remembering it wrong.
I don't know. None of this matters. The point is, we finally got to the point where we should be, whereas Triple H was a
real
dork
boring,
as a face.
Bad guy, Triple H.
And he should have always been a bad guy. I'm not saying he was entertaining as a bad guy. He's just a bad guy.
Yeah, he's not a likable human being.
And if this never happened...
I don't care how many selfies he takes with NXT new champions on Instagram.
Yeah.
Nobody likes Triple H. He's a big jerk.
This signified that the Attitude Era was starting to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that wrestling itself was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because Triple H was taking his first steps into, the next level.
10 years of... 30-minute promos with dramatic pauses in between every half of every sentence like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of that after, it used to be cool when he'd just do, like, are you ready? And then, Road Dogg would say some fun stuff. And then, he'd flip his hair around and just try to look cool in his jean vest over leather jacket.
And like I said, I'm pretty sure this is 97 here.
Good year.
So
good vintage.
Attitude Era is going strong.
Oh, yeah. I think 98 was pretty much the height of it, even though creatively that was like Attitude Era was pretty much over.
Sure.
Financially, 98 is when they were doing their best.
But
they were reaping the rewards of everything they'd sowed into the ground in 97 and 98.
This is H turning heel, and this is It's a foreshadow. It's a glimpse into what the wrestling world would turn into.
I think also
it's important.
It's a big moment because it led into Triple H leaving DX and getting his best theme music ever, the My Time song, which I thought was way better than anything he's had Motorhead do for him since. My number two is also taking us into the 1990s. Into the same year, 1997. It's,
spit take, what?
Flip side of the coin, though. This is happening down south. Down there in, WCW.
I love the South.
Y'all hear CWCW?
Yep.
And, it happened at Fall Brawl, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
It happened during the War Games match that main evented Fall Brawl, 1997.
Oh, no.
And it's when Kurt Hennig joined the NWO.
Oh.
This pissed me off, man, because the NWO, you know, that started in 1996. We're well into the fall of 1997 here. NWO had been dominating for like over a year. It was getting old.
Yeah.
Granted, it was cool at first, and it was fun just to see the heels totally decimate everybody, and it looked real desperate. But once you've made things look totally desperate for your good guys in a story, there's got to be a point where the good guys dust themselves off,
yeah,
have a second wind, and come back, or else your story just goes on forever and gets boring. And Kurt Hennig joining the ranks of WCW, and looks like he was joining the Four Horsemen. I was super stoked about it, because you know Arn Anderson was having to retire, and he cut that once-in-a-lifetime just banger of a promo, where he's talking about how he's got to give it up, and he's giving Kurt Hennig his spot.
Not his dog spot.
Not my liver spot. So yeah, that's the point. Kurt Hennig, awesome wrestler, big fucking Mr. Perfect Mark. I was still a big mark for the Horsemen. I was ready for him to join the Horsemen. Him mm-hmm. and Flair were great together.
Mm-hmm.
And have them finally start just, you know, putting some beatdowns on the NWO and start turning the tide again. And instead of getting to watch that happen, Hennig and Flair looking slick, dressing like real hot and just, you know, being players next to the NWO looking like trash balls would have been great. Instead, no, they throw everything Arn did with that promo in the toilet by doing that parody of it and making it seem silly.
Yeah.
And then just also Hennig's joining the NWO. He's just the 50th guy who's joining the NWO. And it was, I wasn't so into it because, man, the NWO, there was like two halves of it. It was like the cool half where you had like Hall and Six Pac and like Nash. And then like you just had Hogan's 80s guys who they kept joining in. It was like, you know, Conan was like a gritty guy who kind of fit into a NWO grittiness. And then like
he cut a really cool promo.
You get DiBiase in there. Like you start getting Kurt Hennig in there. It was like the NWO was something new. Throwing all the guys who wrestled in the cartoon WWF in the 80s just didn't work for me. Turned it into a different thing. It was one of the things that ruined the NWO.
You needed a Scott Flash Norton and a Buff Bagwell.
Absolutely, and it was one of the things that ruined the Horsemen. I think they should have stuck with this whole pairing. I wanted to see fucking Kurt Hennig as a member of the Four Horsemen. I would have liked it much more than him as a member of the NWO.
What if he turned on Flair 6 months down the road?
Maybe
that would have meant something.
Could have done some shit too. But man, he really walloped Flair's head in the, he slammed the cage door in Flair's head when it looked like he was coming in to save the day. Instead, he just took Flair out. It was a great visual. It's like when the Freebirds turned on the Von Erichs, slamming that door on a head. It was good stuff.
Very similar.
So I was pissed. Everybody in the crowd was pissed. It was a great heel turn in the moment. But, you know, for the long term, it's not what I wanted to see happen, which is why it was effective, because I just wanted to boo it. Boo. Boo, you're a heel and I'm booing you. So I guess it was effective.
Yeah.
Or not.
Or not.
For the reasons I've said, because the NWO was getting boring at that point.
I'm calling an audible. I kicked it around, but I'm gonna lead with it. We poop on the current product a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably as close to current as we can get.
Okay.
2008.
That's 10 years ago. It's a
Jericho.
Long time, but doesn't feel like a long time because they've been putting out the same product that like so little changes in their presentation or their roster that it just it doesn't feel that different, whatever they were doing in 2008.
Jericho was back into the company. He left, he came back.
Oh, you mean like what he's doing now still?
Right, but he had done this a couple times and he'd come back and he's like, I'm saying those things you like. And people were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, he'd done this like two or three times. And like, I at least was starting to be like, this guy's just kind of a kind of a douchebag.
Leaning on his catchphrases.
Like, he's just like being a douchebag.
Late career rock. Yeah. I'm kind of over it.
Like, this is kind of lame. Like, if he's just going to keep coming back to do this, no thank you. Like, just stay away.
Plus, I love your band so much. So yeah. Just well, put out some more Fozzy records, because that's really what I'm in it for.
So
said nobody ever.
2008, Michaels is reinventing himself. He's doing great. He's wrestling matches.
Reinventing himself as a cockeyed, crazy old man.
Yeah.
Grabs people's dicks during matches.
I forget who the fuck he's even feuding with at this point, but like, oh, he had just retired Flair. That's what it was.
Oh, that was a bummer.
And Jericho's like, I think you kind of enjoyed it, you sick fuck. He's like, no, I didn't. He's like, I got this match coming up with Batista. And Jericho's like, well, I'm going to be the special guest referee. Because like, I don't know, man.
Keep an eye on you now.
You're being weird. And Michaels is like, nah, dude, like, nah, I'm like a good guy now. And he's like, I don't know, you used to be a bad guy. And he's like, no, I'm a good guy, though. And he's like, well, okay, you know, I respect you. So he refs that match with Batista, and Michaels is like just doing Shawn Michaels, my knee. And like Jericho's like, oh shit, like, you okay, dude? Like, this is serious. Like, you're an old ass man. You might have really hurt your knee. And Michaels is like, nope, just kidding. Bam, super kick on Batista, easy victory.
But also his knee was hurting.
Yeah.
Because he's an old man. Yeah.
And like, Jericho's like, the fuck, man, you can't do that. And Shawn Michaels is like, yeah, you're right, I shouldn't do that, I'm sorry. Bam, super kick to the face.
I like Jericho's any period like, in Michael's career where he's just randomly super kicking everybody instead of dealing with anything.
Yeah, and this was one of those moments, and it's like, are we getting a little like classic heel Michaels here? Like, this is pretty great. And so Jericho has Michaels out for Raw's Jericho, or whatever the hell his show's called, the highlight reel, that's what it was. Sure. And he's like, you know, you're doing this. Like, why are you being like that, man? And he's like, oh, you know, like, I'm sorry. Like, whatever. Like, I didn't mean to kick everybody's faces in. I'm Shawn Michaels, of course.
Oh, when he starts talking like that, he's ready to kick your face in again.
And then Jericho was like, oh, you look like you want to kick my face, so I'm going to punch you in your balls, old man. And then he smashed Michael's face into the obscenely expensive Jeritron 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a great visual. And immediately made everybody think of the fucking, you know, barbershop
window.
Callback
to the barbershop window where Michaels was the one smashing somebody's face through something obscenely expensive.
Michaels goes face first through this glass TV and it shatters everywhere. And then Jericho starts in with his cool, I'm a bad guy who talks quietly and slowly routine.
That was my favorite period of Jericho, where he was just like not doing anything that anybody could cheer.
Yeah.
He's not like getting fired up in his promos at all. He's keeping an even keel, not giving like anybody any pause points to like do any sort of chanting or anything, and just talking down to people in just like a vaguely condescending tone.
And I love best Jericho. Shawn Michaels. And yeah, I would be upset that this happened to my guy, but Jericho finally made himself important after years of just kind of being a dork. Like,
it did kind of seem like he was never going to get to that level. Like,
even when he was the first undisputed champion or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
they still booked him like a mid-carder.
He was still a dork. Like, they never got it like Nitro did, where they just let him do whatever he wanted, and he just got
himself
over.
It really did take him
like
so far into his career. He just like would never go away, and eventually did become a main eventer, even though no one in management clearly ever wanted him to be.
But like,
he's the little engine that could.
Like I said, he kept like leaving and coming back and leaving and coming back, and it was like, you're still not that important. Like, you're still a dork. Like, you're not doing anything important. And he finally did. And then this is like what changed it to every time he would come back. Now it was like, we're all cheering.
Twist on it.
We're cheering because we're happy to see him. But like, he might be a bad guy again.
He's even
doing
it now.
And that's what
New
he's doing.
Japan,
yeah.
He's just playing like the wild man drunk asshole.
You don't
character.
Know. Yeah. You
he's
don't know who you're going to get.
He's chubby and he's drinking and he's cussing at people and jumping people all the time.
And I don't think any of that happens without this little heel turn right here.
Gross Misfits face paint for some reason.
Well, kind of Misfits. Yeah. But either way, he's no Vampiro.
My number one is the obvious pick. It's the big one. It's the nuclear bomb of heel turns. It's Shawn Michaels throwing Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window.
Okay.
It was probably the first time in my wrestling watching career I'd ever seen a long time tag team break up and one turn on the other one. Seen like some heel turns up to that point, but not like a tag team breakup and like a dude betray his best friend who I'd only seen them join at the hip up to that point.
It's right up there, though, is when Jim the Anvil Neidhart bit Bret Hart's balls for that heel turn.
That happened backstage, though. There was no cameras on it, so it was always a shame. It was always a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's true.
The number one reason why it worked so well for me, though, is because I loved the Rockers. And in 1992,
more importantly,
when the shit was going down,
Party Marty. You were a big-time Jannetty guy.
I was a big Party Marty fucking fan, and I felt like these guys were just, like, on the cusp. Rockers, I always liked them, but they always lost the big match. They could never pull it out. And like, it was always just like, man, I wish those guys could do better.
They were always
I really like watching them. I felt like in 1992, I mean, come to even find out later on as a quote-unquote smart mark, there was like a show where they put the belts on the Rockers.
The house show.
Lost
them
the
next night.
The match was fucked up because the ring broke or something, so they didn't want to air it. So unofficially it happened, but never actually happened. And I was feeling it in 92. I was like, the Rockers are going to get the tag titles. I'm going to love it. They're getting better and better. And it stung this heel turn mostly, not just because I didn't want to watch Shawn Michaels being a bad guy because I liked Shawn Michaels. It was mostly just because I wanted to keep watching the Rockers wrestle together. Like,
you felt deprived.
If it was just a heel turn where both of them turned and they turned into heel Rockers, like, it wouldn't have affected me that much. I'd be like, okay, fine, whatever. I still get to watch the Rockers. But no, I got gypped out of watching the Rockers wrestle together, great team, but wrestle together like in a high level thing where they were winning matches and they were in those tag team main events. It never happened. It was still a knife to my little heart right now. I'm just looking back at myself, little 11-year-old me, 2 years removed from getting all emotional about Sapphire leaving Dusty. Now I'm getting emotional about Sean leaving Marty.
No, see, that's
such a sensitive boy, and pro wrestling made me so cold.
It's funny,
so cold,
the way you bring that up, because like, as you know, I'm big-time Shawn Michaels mark.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was fine with him turning heel because I had always liked bad guys.
Yeah.
Because I was always forced to be the bad guy. And so...
Forced?
Well, you know, limited options. So him being bad guy was okay with me. But I guess maybe I didn't realize, like you said, liking the Rockers and just not being able to see the Rockers anymore.
Mm-hmm. They're taking something away from you.
I don't remember what...
It's giving you a real reason to boo.
What year it was, 2006 maybe, whatever, when they were like doing like the Shawn Michaels, This Is Your Life, and they brought Jannetty back.
Brought him back.
And they had that match on Raw.
It's like La Resistance, wasn't it?
Didn't even matter.
No, it didn't matter because it was
so
cool.
But it was like,
cool.
I'm seeing the Rockers again.
Fucking A.
And I guess
and then fucking,
I didn't realize how important that was.
Yeah, because it was Kurt Angle doing it.
Yeah.
It was then that next night on SmackDown, Jannetty had that real fucking badass match.
Like
just 20, singles match against 25 Angle.
25-minute match against Angle,
and it was like,
yeah.
Holy shit, did Jannetty actually get his shit together now?
Yeah.
And like, but no, he didn't. Marty Jannetty, he didn't have his shit together.
Yeah, I can remember.
Still was able to have good matches even in 2006, though. It was fun watching him in the ring. It's just a shame that he was still dressed like it was 1988.
No, it wasn't a shame. It was awesome.
Well, at that point, it come back around to being awesome. But, you know, throughout the 90s when Shawn was reinventing himself and becoming something new and Marty was always still just like, hey, everybody, it's 1988. I'm rocking and rolling over here. It was
Party Marty's here.
Oh, Party Marty. It's looking sad for you, man.
Yeah.
You really Roman Reigns'd that tag team split up and just kept the same outfit and the same music and... Looked like a real loser.
Oh, here comes Marty Jannetty. Bam, 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 bam.
Roman Reigns is the Marty Jannetty of 2000s wrestling.
Yeah.
No question in my mind. Guy could have had a chance if they would have just gave him new gear and a new song and he would have done something a little bit different. But no, he came out of that split looking like the loser because he kept sticking to the old shit. And the crowd... treated him like the loser that he was.
Nate, cancer, cocaine. Mm-hmm. Either way, it starts with a C and hangs around your neck like a noose in the wrestling business.
That's right. It's not for everybody. Not everybody can be the champ.
just John Cena.
It's a rough world out there in the pro wrestling game.
Speaking of pro wrestling, what do we got fired up? Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I'm going to Florida Friday.
Okay, so we're not doing a podcast next week. Yeah. So we're doing a week off, and then when we come back, we're going to be doing Saturday night's main event
from
April 30th, 1988.
I like that.
So
we'll
all go down to Florida.
We come back with a big...
We're going to go down to Jimmy Hart's Hall of Fame bar and Tiki Deck.
I don't know
if
I'm going to be able to hit it.
Party Marty's going to be there. We're going to do some blow out there in his bathrooms at Jimmy Hart's Tiki Deck.
I'll definitely
crush some cans out on the beach.
Hogan's Surf Shop again. I'm going to make it into Bushwhacker Luke or Butch, whoever's got the gym right there. I'm going to go in. I think it's Luke. I'm going to go in there and do a couple reps until somebody asks me to leave.
Florida's so much fun. It's like you don't need to build the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame because
Florida is the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. I'll come back with so many stories. I'll have stuff to talk about.
It's
going to
be a good
podcast.
So will
you. You'll have things you want to talk about.
You're Mr. Rogers in it.
I will too. On Baby All in Blow, stay single.